This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. A recent investigation by the Washington Post and the nonprofit newsroom The Examination found that food companies are paying registered dietitians to promote processed food and snacks on social media. The dietitians featured in the investigation also were using popular anti-diet messaging. Joining me now to talk about the anti-diet movement, how companies are profiting from it, and the potential impacts on public health, our TriHealth pediatrician, Dr. Denise Warwick. Welcome, Dr. Warwick.
Thanks, Lucy. I'm happy to be here.
Glad to have you. And Xavier University Associate Professor of Communications, Leslie Rasmussen. Thanks for being here, Leslie.
Thanks for having me.
Leslie, what is the anti-diet movement and what inspired it?
You know, I think the anti-diet movement is being conflated with the body positivity movement because I have found that in many of my conversations, people tend to think anti-diet means body positivity, and it doesn't necessarily mean that. Body positivity is this concept of all bodies are good bodies, whereas anti-diet is essentially throwing out all of these, you know, long-held ideas about dieting and what that means. And I think there's absolutely some value there as well. But it is important to point out that they are two separate movements, I think.
Okay. And what was the root of the anti-diet movement? What were the beginnings of that?
I'm honestly not sure,
okay.
But it has certainly popped up in my TikTok feed.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Okay. Fair enough. Are you familiar with that, Dr. Warwick? Have you studied at all the anti-diet movement and its roots?
I think this is something that I think has kind of come out from a social media standpoint. But I think as far as the roots of it, I don't know that it had like a very robust, like kind of starting point. I think, you know, certainly when we look at like nutrition and, you know, adolescents and their kind of body image issues, that's not anything that's new. And so there's been a lot talked about that over time. And I think the pendulum swings back and forth as far as, you know, our goal is to promote, you know, healthy nutrition and for kids to have good positive role models and also have positive images about their own body. But certainly we know social media can certainly, you know, create different, you know, complexes for certain adolescents. And so we really are, you know, conscientious about, you know, how, you know, our young ones are getting information about nutrition and kind of what healthy habits include. And so, you know, I think it's, you know, interesting to see where this has come from. And I think, you know, maybe have a double-edged sword of, you know, some, you know, roots behind it in a way to kind of think about oneself as, you know, in a healthy way without feeling like we need to kind of always have less and less of certain things, but about, you know, we really promote moderation and, you know, all foods, but I could see how some things can be made extreme, you know, in all different ways. So,
yeah. Well, and Dr. Warwick, you know, our society's been so focused on weight loss and equating thinness with health for so many years. How has that affected adults and the way they parent their children when it comes to food?
Absolutely. And I think kind of we really promote, you know, even talking in the office about, you know, growth parameters when we show, you know, children their growth charts, we are very conscious about how we say that and how we frame it for some people, because some people don't even want to know what their weight is when they come in, or it can cause, you know, complexes to even know, you know, what a specific number would be. So we really talk about health as just kind of our overall goal and say we promote being healthy. It's not about being thin or skinny or, you know, excluding certain foods from the diet, but about being healthy in general. And I think the people that maintain health for most of their life, as far as, you know, healthy eating and, you know, lifestyle habits, do so because they eat things in moderation and they don't exclude all things in their diet. And so I think that's where this, you know, movement really kind of, you know, works against us, and that, you know, we really want, you know, people to have, you know, a well-rounded diet with lots of different sources of nutrition and not just, you know, excluding certain foods or promoting other certain foods. So there's no, you know, quick fix or golden ticket as far as, you know, how to, you know, be the perfect ideal body weight. It's more about, you know, overall health and trying to kind of use that for, you know, lifelong habits that start from, you know, childhood onward.
Yeah. Leslie, you're an associate professor, but you're also a parent. How do you navigate this difficult terrain as a mom?
You know, it's interesting. I have an almost 11-year-old and a 6-year-old, and my 11-year-old has become more conscious of her body. We're a relatively healthy household and very active as well. And it pains me, honestly, to hear those comments. because parents are talking about it, other girls are, you know, talking about it. We're seeing these images on social media a lot. Whether we try to protect our children or not, they're still exposed to it at some point. And it really is a challenge. For me, I really try to focus on the health aspect of it. People can't see me, but I would be described as a relatively small person in stature. And my child likes to point that out as well. And I mostly try to reframe this as health, right? So I don't need you to eat everything on your plate. I need you to eat until your body tells you you're full, which is not something that my generation really got growing up. It was don't leave anything on the table. So listening to those body cues and also just discussions about moderation, and it's okay to have treats, but also we need to pay attention to, is our body not feeling good? Because it won't feel good if we have 6 scoops of ice cream. So really just striking that balance between focusing on health, not a number, and also strength in my house. We talked about like wanting to be strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Work, how you mentioned that, you know, for some patients, some children that you see as a pediatrician, even knowing that number on the scale could be upsetting, or that spot on the growth chart, how do you navigate that? Is that something, information then, that you would give parents but not children? Is it not important to know that because it doesn't define overall health? Is it still important to know those markers?
That's a great point. I think, you know, we like to kind of gauge where the child is at. So if they recognize, you know, we ask, you know, do you feel like, you know, at this time you feel like your size is just right, or you feel like you may be too big or too small? And we let them kind of, you know, be a part of that conversation. And if they kind of identify in one specific spot, then we guide them with kind of ways to get them to a, you know, healthy place. And it may be unfounded that they may feel like they're too big, but that's not, you know, appropriate when we look at kind of the, you know, the objective evidence on the growth charts. And so we try to really build up body positivity and kind of look at where that's coming from and try to reframe their thoughts in that way. But if they do recognize that maybe they're, you know, they're at an unhealthy place, you know, within the growth chart, we try to be sensitive to that and, you know, work as a family to really target interventions, because, you know, we're not going to set a child up for success if they come home to, you know, Doritos in the pantry and, you know, nothing but junk food. But it is a really big family decision as far as motivating the family itself to, you know, increase activity and try to, you know, make, you know, good eating choices. And again, you know, that's why it's so important to be done to do this in conjunction with, you know, your healthcare professional, your pediatrician, you know, a dietitian, you know, to really kind of work at this and do it in a healthy way. Because, you know, some kids will kind of, you know, maybe they identify that they're larger than they want to be, and they'll go on like a crash diet of some sort and, you know, lose some weight. But, you know, the big thing is, you know, how do they sustain, you know, habits, and how do we keep them at a healthy, you know, BMI for, you know, for their lifetime. And that's what's going to, you know, keep them healthy and avoid any kind of other, you know, secondary outcomes related to, you know, either too low weight or, you know, too high weight for the long term, because on both ends of that spectrum, they can have secondary health consequences.
Sure. And for children, you want to make sure they're getting the nutrients they need for their growing bodies, too, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we've seen in situations where, you know, adolescents that have had eating disorders, for example, it can stunt their growth. And so it's important to talk to them, you know, about, you know, their future health potential, as it doesn't matter, you know, for right now. You know, I say, you know, why are we, you know, having good eating habits? You know, why are we talking about that now? And I say, you know, it's important for them to, you know, develop these healthy eating habits that they'll have forever. So
We're talking about anti-diet culture and a link between some dietitians who are social media influencers and big food companies who were sponsoring them. Do you have questions about anti-diet culture and how to navigate food choices for yourself or maybe for your children? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. I want to get to this investigation now. As I mentioned, the Washington Post and this nonprofit news organization called The Examination investigated a link between some dietitians who are on social media and their influencers and big food corporations who were sponsoring them. Leslie, talk about that investigation and what it found.
Essentially, it found that these dietitians were paid to promote these products that are, you know, sugary and processed and so on. And I think anytime you have influencers that are taking sponsorships, obviously there's a vested interest in that. The sheer fact that they have the credentials behind them adds a layer of credibility that is just undeniable. People will automatically trust that. Something that I study through the lens of influencers is parasocial relationship building. So this idea that viewers, the more times that they are exposed to these influencers, the more credibility they develop and they, you know, believe they can trust them, essentially. So you have that happening on top of the fact that these folks have their credentials. And I don't think there's anything wrong with a balanced, you know, situation where, you know, maybe you need a protein bar that is processed once in a while. But it gets very blurry when you have people that do have these medical credentials taking sponsorships for money in order to make a profit. So it arguably presents these foods as healthy options. And that might not necessarily be true. It's going to obviously depend on each instance and what specific product we're talking about. But it is very powerful to see influencers doing stuff like this. And I think it's just an area that I personally would not want to delve into if I also had a career in medicine or public health, because you have a vested interest in it, right? You know, Pop-Tarts, for example, that's one that I keep seeing these dietitians talk about. And I find really interesting because that is, the Pop-Tarts are just so sugary. And even my children will say, this is just too much. So where that fits in between, you know, this balance of influencers wanting to make a profit and also maintaining your credibility as a medical professional, I think is really interesting. And ultimately, any influencer, any industry, you have to disclose your sponsorships. And I think that's problematic. So influencers are held to the same laws and regulations that the FCC puts on advertising. So in the absence of that, it becomes even more confusing and more problematic. So I think the investigation's absolutely warranted. We need to pull that apart a little further and figure out, you know, what actually is happening and how is it going to impact society at large.
Yeah. So to make sure I understand, these are registered dietitians, health professionals who are saying, hey, maybe it's great to have. I don't worry about Pop-Tarts. I don't worry about junk food. If it's what I want, it's what I want. And then they were using these kind of anti-diet hashtags too, weren't they?
Yes. Hashtag derail the shame is a pretty popular one on TikTok right now. And that's confusing because, of course, we don't want to shame anyone. And at the same time, as the doctor was saying, right, we need to emphasize health and wellness and what that means, actually. So when you take these products, like, I don't mean to pick on Pop-Tarts, but here we go again, Pop-Tarts and you're a dietitian saying, hey, this is okay. It might be once in a while, but the problem is that video lives on and continues on, and people don't necessarily consume that and understand that what we're talking about here is a once in a while situation, should not be a regular part of your diet, essentially. So it's just confusing, I think, for viewers. And then again, that other added element of you got to disclose that you've been paid.
Yeah. Dr. Warwick, how does that align with just public health and the anti-diet movement, or does it? I mean, what kind of impact could this kind of thing have on the health of adults and children who see these videos or public health in general?
I think it's so interesting, you know, coming from a perspective of a profession that we feel very altruistic and that, you know, we're trying to function on behalf of the patient at all times and really put them first. I think it's, you know, interesting to see kind of how this has taken like this particular spin. You know, I can recall every talk I've given, you know, in, you know, my career is, you know, always disclosing what your financial, you know, interest and relationships are to at the beginning of that. So, you know, I totally agree with Dr. Rasmussen that we really need to disclose that, you know, and that needs to be first and foremost. And I think the hard part is, you know, when it comes to this current generation is that a lot of times, you know, just like any, you know, kid going through like adolescence and young adulthood, they put a lot of their worth in the outside world. So their friends, you know, now social media, which is kind of a whole different, you know, aspect of, you know, how kids are kind of identifying their self-worth, and that, you know, if they're taking these little snippets that very likely are being taken out of context, you know, they're going to kind of see that, oh, you know, Susie, who says she's a dietitian, is, you know, promoting Pop-Tarts, and, you know, I can eat that and be healthy. And so, you know, I think that's why it's so important that, you know, we include kids and have them following up for like regular checkups, and that we can really identify, because I've had certain situations where, you know, I've encouraged and motivated families and said, you know, hey, we really need to increase our, you know, fruit intake. And so, you know, follow up 6 months later to see how things have progressed. And instead, this kid was eating fruit roll-ups, and the mom had identified, you know, it has fruit in it. And I said, well, that may, you know, be true in certain instances, but it's not the fruit that I was thinking of too. So, you know, I think where people get their information and resources, you know, is all over the place. And, you know, for the good or the bad, you know, the internet and social media is a big source of that. I have, you know, often questions coming from newborns through, you know, young adulthood. You know, they'll say, well, I read this on TikTok, or I saw this on Instagram, or I had this from Facebook. Just like anything, it's really important to filter that information, because if one individual says it, doesn't mean that they have the gospel truth of exactly what that is. And so, you know, it is hard coming from someone that has credentials from as a medical professional and, you know, dietetics or otherwise, that we do have to take that as, you know, one person's opinion and kind of put that in context of, you know, all the other information they're taking in from, you know, their, you know, primary care physician to, you know, their, you know, health teacher at school and things like that. And so, I think education is so important, and that's why, you know, unfortunately, you know, the culture that, you know, exists with weight and, you know, the ideal of, you know, being thin and skinny and those things, we have to really kind of overall kind of promote health first and foremost, to try to really promote that, you know, self-worth for kids, and to really encouraging them to be healthy lifelong throughout their adulthood.
Well, because, you know, Dr. Work, as I'm sure you know, a review of research in the United Kingdom found a direct association between eating too many ultra-processed foods and more than 30 health conditions, including heart disease, anxiety, even early death. Tell us more about the health effects of processed foods and what kind of marketing messages we might be getting from them that are just confusing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, as, you know, manufacturers have identified, you know, the diet culture, saying things are low fat or diet, you know, this or light that, you know, is, you know, kind of an eye grabber and will kind of motivate a lot of people to buy those things, even if, you know, it may have other effects as far as increasing hunger cues in different ways. And we're coming to understand, you know, obesity is more of a chronic condition. And there's so much that interplays with that as far as your environment and your genetics. And so we can't put our finger on exactly one thing that's going to, you know, create unhealthy habits in the long haul. But I think, you know, what we can do is we do realize the interplay of all those things. And that's why oftentimes we take a multidisciplinary approach, right? So we have to kind of meet patients where they are, and we have to kind of surround them with a support system that's going to enable them to be successful. But I think, you know, what we've identified and known for a long time is that, you know, fruits and vegetables are, you know, should be a staple of, you know, people's diet. And that, you know, ideally that's where you're going to get a lot of your nutrition and your vitamins and your minerals. We know that, you know, protein is a component of your diet as well as carbohydrate. So we want to eat those things in their proper amounts in moderation. And that, you know, it is, you know, ideal to think that, you know, a protein bar, one single item has everything that we need. And I think that's, you know, unreasonable to think. But I think, you know, if we, you know that, you know, kids are going to have certain preferences and tastes and try to cater to that, but also know that, you know, continuing to work on expanding their horizons, because as we know, those, you know, picky toddlers, you know, we want to kind of not turn them off to certain things in general, but just continuing to, you know, help them eat a good variety is the where we kind of meet them as a young, you know, young person, and hope to kind of, you know, steer them in the right direction to establish those eating habits early, so that, you know, we don't feel like they're kind of only getting pigeonholed into certain, you know, highly processed foods and things like that.
Yeah. So what responsibility do parents have to guide their children when it comes to healthy eating without falling into this diet culture trap, Dr. Warwick?
Oh, this is a tough one. So I think if you talk about, for most parents, like a, stress of, are your kids eating enough? Are they eating the right amounts of things? Are they, are they skipping meals? I think, that's, something that weighs on a lot of parents' minds all the time. And so I think their responsibility, I tell, parents from a very young age, is their job is to offer the variety and then also teach, like Dr. Rasmussen pointed out, those satiety cues of when, kids are feeling full and when they're, they've had enough to eat. I think, unfortunately, a lot of start of obesity comes from portion sizes. And so we're very cognizant of, teaching kids to not win the clean plate award anymore, which, I think, a generation ago was kind of what we were taught. So I think ultimately, teaching kids that, even from like infant, times, if they're full, stop feeding and then, teach them what it feels like to be full. And then kind of monitor throughout life. I think, the hard part is, we also encourage parents to, not fight that power struggle over mealtimes too, because sometimes that can lead them to a place where, the kid will ultimately win out because they have the determination of what they put into their mouth. So, it's more about just kind of setting up environments for healthy eating. So trying to create family meal times, trying to make it an enjoyable experience, trying to sit down and talk and enjoy the day and not be like a rushed experience, because we know with very active lifestyles and after school activities, it can get very busy. And, families are eating at different times. They're, shoveling things in their mouth to get from place to place or eating fast food on the go. And so, as much as possible within reason, trying to come up with those good eating habits at a young age that will hopefully continue into young adulthood. But also too, being good role models, because we know kids often look to us. And so, if our parents are saying, I'm only going to eat this because I don't want to be fat or something like that. Kids hear that, and so they internalize a lot of those things. So they pick up on more than we realize.
Okay, well, we've been talking about anti-diet culture, and I've been talking with TriHealth pediatrician Dr. Denise Warwick and Xavier University Associate Professor of Communications Leslie Rasmussen. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you'll tune in again tomorrow.